If you find this podcast, this is for you. Our lives are written in ink. There are no backspaces, cancels, or delete buttons. But beauty and redemption emerge when we embrace our ink-stained imperfections and share them with one another. This is how we find our strength. This is how we renew our resolve. This is how we overcome. You're listening to the Inkfully Podcast, and I'm your host, Tanya Woods. All right, you guys, welcome back to the Inkfully Podcast.
Yes, nailed it. And take two. Let's do it. Fingers up, put your hands high. Bye. You should keep that intro. I'm just gonna say it.
What up, y'all? This is Tanya with the Inkfully Podcast. You already know this, and I am already laughing because I'm already talking to one of my favorite people on the planet Earth, you guys. This is my friend Kaylee, and she is a friend from Seattle, now Montana living, that Montana life, whatever that means.
Good old horse riding.
Like horse riding, and what else do you guys do in Montana?
We farm.
Yeah.
And we ride horses.
It's really luxurious.
We have lots of guns.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Lots of guns, lots of space.
Oh my gosh. So we have to get, first of all, let's just put all the disclaimers out there. Number one, I'm talking at like 11 p.m., like post children's bedtime. It's what, 9 p.m. there. So you've got your kids asleep. I've got my kids asleep. It's been a long day. And we're talking about today motherhood and mental health. And I'm like, how fitting, because it's been one of those weeks. So I'm like, we're actually going to have a session right now. And my girl doesn't even know yet. So let's just hop right into it. Let's do it. I want to bring you on, KK, my babe, and talk about motherhood, mental health, and just the whole spectrum of it, right? In the month of May, we kind of do both, right? It's Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's also the month we celebrate Mother's Day, which can be like an all-month thing, right? And so this is something I'm really passionate about. So sure. I feel like if we give light to that today and speak to, you can be a new mom or you can be a seasoned mom trying to figure your way out and figure out how you navigate, you know, this mental health space on the spectrum of motherhood. And that's why we're here to talk about today. So let's just jump into it.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited. I really appreciate you having me. I feel really honored. A little nervous, but really excited. I know I'm a little nervous, but it'll be fine.
It's an important conversation though. So it'll be good.
It's really important. I feel like, so I started I started getting my master's in mental health counseling last year, and really what brought me to this place is actually just struggling with mental illness myself, and struggling with postpartum depression, and being raised in a really volatile home, and just having this constant conversation with the mental health community to help me, which eventually led me to want to help other people in that way. So yeah, it's been a long road, but a good road. I'm excited about it.
Well, let's start from there. Let's start from the beginning. Like,
okay.
Take me back to your childhood, Kaylee. But no, well, but like, yeah.
Yep. Okay. I'll start from the beginning. So I was born to two lovely people, who I love and adore, my mom and my dad, but my home is a really, really volatile place. And growing up in that environment, seeing a lot of chaos, a lot of fighting, a lot of yelling, a lot of physical abuse, a lot of verbal abuse, a lot of mental abuse can really do a number on your personality, actually. Because we're born, God gives us, or we're born with a specific temperament, you know, and then our environment kind of shapes it.
Yeah.
And so as I got into adolescence and started dating, I noticed that I had crazy dating patterns with my partners. and I was really, really up and down. I vacillated from being really overly affectionate and in a meshed kind of with these people where I didn't have good separation mm-hmm. to hating them and, you know, treating them really poorly, kind of back and forth. And when I was 21,
did you know something was wrong at that point yet?
No.
Okay.
No, I thought I treated people like poo poo.
Mm-hmm.
I almost just said shit, and I just said it.
She's trying so hard, guys. She's trying so hard.
We also swear in Montana. Poo poo just doesn't sum it up. It doesn't. Okay, so. I was like, my worldview was very, very shaped by the way I was raised.
Yeah.
And, I thought that it was normal to be in a relationship with someone and have it be totally chaotic. Mm-hmm. And I thought that if someone loved me, they would do everything perfectly. And the minute that they failed me, they were all bad. They didn't have two parts, you know, they were either all good or all bad. They weren't one person, that could be good and make mistakes.
Right.
There was no integration in my mind. People were all good or all bad. So when I was 21, I got pregnant at a marriage. Whoop.
Yeah.
And it happens to the best of us, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I started seeing a therapist because my relationship with my baby daddy was very volatile. And it was through that. I remember sitting down.
Or after baby? Or the whole
this time. Was the whole time from day one. And when I started going to counseling with her, I remember her father and I would be sitting in the counseling room while I was pregnant. And we'd be trying to, and we weren't really trying to work on a relationship. We were just trying to work on co-parenting at that moment.
Okay.
And I was relaying a story to her about how he had said that we had plans together, and then he didn't remember that we had plans together, and I couldn't understand how someone who loved me could forget that we had these really important plans.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at me and she said, Kaylee, she said, is it possible that this person truly cares about you, but also truly forgot? And I kind of had like a light bulb go off on my head. And that's the moment my worldview opened up. Now, I don't think everyone, you know, with mental illness, it's such a spectrum. Thank you, God, that I was able to see that light.
Yeah.
Sometimes not everyone gets there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like into motherhood, right after I had my daughter and having that moment of realization, I continued on with therapy and, but, you know, having a child is really chaotic. And so despite all the therapy I'd been through, bringing this beautiful girl into the world was crazy.
Yeah.
And I already had the background of having some major depressive disorder is actually what I was diagnosed with.
Okay.
And I had a little bit of anorexia nervosa and bulimia at the time too.
Yeah.
It's
kind of all like a cocktail that you were dealing
with. Absolutely. It was just a lot. And a lot of times when someone goes into a therapist, they'll get, you know, they'll be comorbid. There'll be multiple diagnoses because mm-hmm. sometimes not one diagnosis adequately sums up all the symptoms that they're suffering with. So, that was just kind of the beginning of my journey. And then having her really triggered some of the things that I thought I had worked through.
Wow.
And I know, you know how that is. Like, mm-hmm. come on. Having kids is the worst. honestly, kids are so great, but they're not great, and they're really hard on our minds and our bodies and our hearts, like really, really hard. I have days. So I have four kids. You have three.
Yeah.
I have days where I think I'm done. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like you, mm-hmm. child number three. You're the worst.
Yeah.
Go. Like, there are days where I'm laying on the couch and all my kids will be, like, actually, even just tonight for bedtime, Ethan, my husband, God bless him, will you help me put the boys down? No. No, I won't. Like, I just laid on the couch and thought, I have zero energy to get off this couch. And if you make me get off this couch, to go help the boys. I'm probably going to die. And
that's real.
Here's the divorce papers. Like, we're done. Like, it just, it kind of, you have those moments where it's like, no, I can't do this.
Yeah.
And then you add in any type of like any other type of struggle or mental illness on top of that, or even like, I mean, you don't have to have a mental illness to be totally whacked out and stressed out by children, but you add all those stressors. Like, you, what if you add, what if you added on a socioeconomic stressor? What if you were in poverty? What if you were a single parent? What if you are, you know, a minority? Like, there are so many other stressors to be added to motherhood that, I mean, even at our best, we're struggling. Even in the best case scenario, we're struggling, and it's hard.
And that's the part, Kay, you know, that people aren't talking about, you know, and that's why we're doing this, because it's not like we're trying to be. Sometimes when I first started this podcast, I was kind of nervous because I felt like, am I like going to sound like this Debbie Downer, like this, you know, everything sucks in life. And that's obviously not the point, but it's like, we're shedding light on some serious, really serious issues that are happening in the undercurrent of society that no one is saying, you know, and that's why we're sharing this space. And so I have to say that. So it's not like we're here trying to like bash motherhood to the core, but we're saying, this is what you're, this is what we're not saying. And I guess there's someone on the other side of us listening on the other side of this that needs to know that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Yeah. It's both. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's always both. It's never all good or all bad. It's always both. It has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is very true. That is very true.
So you just mentioned that you have four now. So you had this, you had your one, you know, baby daddy thing. And then, you know, you and Ethan got married and you got three more. So that's four. Yes. And how has the journey of mothering with, you know, this added weight of, you know, mental illness compiled, how has it amplified over the years because of that?
Okay, let's start. Okay, so Addie is 11.
Yeah.
Going on 12. Anchor is 6 going on 7. Anders is 4 going on 5. Annika is 2 going on 3. When I had Anchor, I was in Seattle. Had I met you then?
Yeah. Oh, no. I met you right. Anchor was 9 months old when I met you.
Oh, what a blessed time to be alive with you in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I have some really fun memories of you sitting on my couch and having some good conversations.
We had some good time. Yeah, we had some really good talks.
Anyway, so I had Anchor and I was doing okay, pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling fine. I had an amazing delivery, and actually kind of like the twilight period right after I have babies, like the 3 months where you're just living in hell, but you're somehow surviving and you don't understand what's happening and you feel like you're drunk all the time, but you're not, and you're not sleeping, but you're fine. You're like, how did I do that? So about when Anchor turned 6 months old, I was getting really, really depressed, not getting out of the house, not getting up, not eating, just really, really isolated, feeling really, really alone, feeling really, really scared. And it was kind of one of those things that it's not like it happened in a day.
Yeah.
It happened over, you know, the course of months. And we ended up,
to say, yeah,
yes, mm-hmm. It is not when you are struggling. So I believe, in after talking to my therapist and my doctors, that I had postpartum depression. People think postpartum depression happens, you know, you have it can, where you have a baby and you immediately feel anxious and overwhelmed and poor appetite, lack of energy, and you're not bonding. That can happen right away. Guess what? It can happen within 12 months of having a baby. So Anchor 6, 7, 8, 9 months is when I kind of started to go downhill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Ethan would come home and I would just be a blob. Like, and it wasn't like I was crying all the time. I mean, it can look a lot of different ways, but I just feel really, really helpless and really, really isolated and kind of like I just didn't have an identity. Like I was just floating around in space.
Yeah.
So that's what his experience looked like. We ended up going into the doctor, getting on an antidepressant. Listen, Christians.
Mm.
Go to your doctor. get on your antidepressant. Yeah. Jesus made antidepressants. Jesus made anti-anxiety medicine. Come at me if you disagree. Honestly, come at me. Like, there is, you don't have to live that way. Mm-hmm. And if taking an antidepressant makes you a good mom, makes you able to wake up in the morning and freaking feed your kid breakfast instead of laying in bed, letting your 12-month-old crawl around on the ground and you're trying to muster up any energy to get out of the bed. If antidepressants do that, take them.
Yeah.
And so what a godsend because I started taking them.
I'm going to
actually, because really quick, interject, do it.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's making me emotional because I feel like, so I'm like 8 years, right? Elijah's 8 years old. I've been in this thing for that long. And yeah. I've seen counselors over time, not one that I really was able to get through to. And here's the thing that happens with my personality is I can convince you, not intentionally, that I'm okay right. in a session, right? Shit's not right. hitting the fan when I'm in a session. I'm with you without any tension around me, you know? So it's like,
right.
I almost convince my own self that it's not as bad as I think, you know? And unless I have I feel like I'm still looking for a therapist that's able to press in and be like, wait a minute, you said something and then you circled back and cleaned it up. You know what I mean? And I do that a lot. I'm able to say something, you know, and I know the answer. I know what I'm supposed to say to you, you know?
So I can hear it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And so
you explain it away.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say to yourself, Tanya, it's not that bad right now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what, I know what to say to this person right now. So they, because you're still performing for that therapist.
Yeah.
You're giving them you're performing for them because what if I say, I want to kill myself. Mm-hmm. I want to murder my husband. I want to throw my kids off a cliff. I don't want to live this life. What if you said those things? What would that mean about you?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and guess what? You're not like, as women and as people, we feel those things. Those are real feelings. And it doesn't mean that they're true, but we have to acknowledge them in order to overcome them. We can't fake our way. Like, we can't think our way through it and like explain it away. And then just expect things to get better. That's like putting a band-aid on it. We have to experience the depravity that we feel. We have to like literally lean into the negativity. And I don't know how many people are going to disagree with me, but hear me out.
Yeah.
When you're having a hard day and someone tries to make you feel better by saying, oh, but this is good and you're so great and they're minimizing your pain.
Or doing it to myself. I do that to myself all the
time. Yeah, you're minimizing your own pain. You're minimizing it and you're making your, like, someone is making themselves more comfortable with your pain, or you're trying to make yourself more comfortable mm-hmm. with your pain. Mm-hmm. What you need to do is feel your pain. Mm-hmm. And you got to feel it. You got to lean into it. And actually, when we lean into our feelings, it makes them more palatable. Like, we can tolerate them more when we actually feel them. It's when we try to not feel them is when we spiral into like performance and, you know, trying to think it away and explain it away. So
I think another thing is that, so I haven't been diagnosed as with depression, like clinically diagnosed, although I know that it's definitely past overdue, right?
Sure.
I think something that happens is when you haven't gotten to that stage yet, you wonder, well, is it depression? Because, I mean, it comes and it goes, you know, I'm able to, right. you know, see, once I see my friends, I'm fine. Like, I'm laughing with them, but then I get back home and I slowly kind of, you know, is it like, am I just making this up? You know, you start feeling that. That's one thing. Two, it's like, well, maybe the self-care word that everybody's hashtagging all over the place. It's like,
oh my gosh. More,
I know you have.
Don't even start with it. I'm going to say something I regret.
Okay. I'm going to let you go. You say
it. No, do it. No, you say it. I interrupted you.
Well, that's the thing. I think that you start when you're new to do what you're having those questions in your head, you know? I want to speak to that person too, because I feel that obviously I am one of those, like, is this what I have, you know, and do I have depression? Is this anxiety? Is this a panic attack? Is this normal? Is this not normal? You know, but based off of what you're describing, I know I have experienced some of those things before, like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm looking at my child playing and I am thinking, you know, things that I shouldn't be thinking about my child, you know?
Absolutely. You're so brave to say that.
Yeah.
That is a brave thing to say.
Yeah. So if that's happening, right? But then you're like, well, maybe I just need to spend some more time with my friends, or maybe I just need some time, self-care time and all that stuff. And it's, that's what you're seeing on Instagram. That's where you, oh, you just make space for yourself and blah, blah. But it's like, it's not working, you know? And I know that there's preliminary steps. So talk about the preliminary steps prior to, you know, a diagnosis. Like, for example, when I went into the therapist, they're telling me, hey, why don't you, before you take an antidepressant, you know, try exercise. Have you tried exercise? Have you tried, you know, changing your diet? Have you tried, you know, all that? What's the process like of like?
So if you're a new mom out there, first of all, you need to know that it is not normal, and it's, and you shouldn't have to just, like a lot of the culture we live in is like a do it all mom, where you have a baby, your vagina's perfectly tight again, your abs are showing, like you're going to Target 2 days after that baby's born, you're having sex with your husband, you're posting it, hashtag live authentic, hashtag best is yet to come, blah, 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 bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Listen, you don't have, like, it's not normal to A, do that and fake it, like that's suffering, and B, it's not normal to feel isolated, to feel alone, to feel helpless. Is it normal to feel overwhelmed with a baby? 100%. Is it normal to feel like, holy crap, what did I do? This is new. Absolutely. Everyone gets a little bit of baby blues where they're like, whew, I'm tired and sleep deprived. It's not normal to be so concerned about your baby's breathing that you're not sleeping. It's not normal to have trouble concentrating. It's not normal to not eat. It's not normal to have no energy to perform everyday tasks. And I think when you start to notice, or people are noticing around you, those things with postpartum depression, postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD, don't be afraid to ask for help, new moms. Don't be afraid to go to your practitioner. Don't be afraid to go to your friends. Don't be afraid to go to whoever you have in your life that can give you support to say, you know what? Everyone else is doing it all. I don't want to do it all. I need help.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the live authentic mom on Instagram. I can't do that anymore. I don't want to pretend like everything's okay. I cannot do that. Go get help. Like, it's, those are not normal things. And so if you're having those symptoms, you would go in to your doctor, your therapist. Actually, let's back up.
Mm-hmm.
Prevention.
Let's do it.
Let's do prevention. Let's, when you get pregnant, I'm actually wondering why they don't offer therapy for people who are pregnant.
Say it again.
Why do they not offer therapy for people who are pregnant, for the people in the back? Yeah. Can I get an amen?
Yeah.
Pregnancy is super hard on your mind and your body. Mm-hmm. And I think as the medical field evolves, I'm hoping that they integrate more therapeutic approaches to client care, including the actual therapy, mindfulness, breathing, yoga. A lot of Eastern medicine, Christians don't run away. It's not scary. Like, there's no witchcraft in it. It's mindfulness. It's connecting your mind to your body.
Yeah.
And so if you're a new mom out there, do it.
Yeah, that's good. I'm so glad that you're saying
I don't
that.
Even know what you asked me.
No, actually. No. It doesn't matter. That was really good. And it's, you know, it needs to be said. There's a lot of advances we need to make in the mental health community, you know?
Absolutely.
As it relates to, you know, motherhood and just preparation, like what you may experience. And they say this is what you mean, but like you said, being proactive about getting already having something set up before baby comes, you know what I mean? Like, hey, I'm already meeting with a therapist. Like, this should be one of the things you're worrying about, you know, getting the right crib and getting the right freaking, I don't even know, everything, you know, stroller.
Well, like, you're worried about what your Instagram pictures are going to look like.
Exactly. Okay. All right.
So you're like, can I get all neutral nude everything?
All right.
I would like the Scandinavian crib and the the nude organic earth dyed swaddle. And can I also get the Moses basket? And does Moses come with that? Because I got to set up these freaking pictures and they better get a lot of likes. Like, that is what it is. That's what it's become.
Toxic. It's so toxic. And I literally can stay on this. I mean, we can do this all day because it's not bashing, but it's kind of like calling out. Like
let's bash it. Sorry. Let's not bash it. Just kidding.
You're good. We kind of are. But listen, it's needed because I was just telling Erin this. I haven't posted anything in like a couple of days because I was like, babe, I don't want to do this. There has to be another way. Like, I wish I could just do this with you, put it onto the airways and not have to do any of the other stuff. I'm like,
I know.
We're so intentional about what we're doing on Instagram and we're trying to pretend like we're not. And that thing that drives me nuts. Like, this is my prayer. Lord, help show me how to do this without falling into the same trap. Yeah. So that's
we can stop dressing our kids in white linen.
Well, that will
we could all mutually agree that white linen for children is the dumbest thing that's ever happened on the planet. And every time you put your freaking kid in white linen on Instagram and it's clean, you're selling a lie.
You're selling a lie.
A bag of lies. Linen, a bag of linen lies.
Yeah.
So. But that makes that to tie that into mental health. Listen, yeah. with moms in comparison, in that culture, that's so toxic. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine being a brand new mom in the social media age.
Yeah.
I can't fathom it. I don't want to fathom it. Mm-hmm. It would do a total number because, you would constantly feel inadequate.
Absolutely. All the time.
You would feel all the time like you didn't measure up, all the time like you needed this, you needed that, you needed this. Mm-hmm. All the time, all the advice, and we talked about this a while ago, all the advice you get from people, how you will be told 20 different things on how to get your kid to sleep. And you're just like, what? Mm-hmm. Like, I got told 20 different things and everyone's really right.
I know I said this before, you're so spongy as a mother, especially a new mother, and maybe later on in motherhood, but at some point I feel like you reach some maturation in motherhood where you're like, screw all that, forget, you know what I mean? But I feel like, you know, you're very impressionable because you want to do it right. You don't want to screw up your kid, you know, or you just don't want to screw this thing up and you're trying to figure out. And so that makes us even more like, almost like childlike. You're almost like, I mean, I don't know if there's a mental health thing that goes with that, but I see it. Like, I can feel the energy, like feel that we're all like little sponges soaking up whatever someone says. If someone says they're like waking up, oh yeah, like, so what do you do for fun? Oh, I love to run. Like, oh shit, she's running already. Like her baby's 3 months. My baby's 2 years old. I haven't done anything. I'm lazy as hell, blah, blah. You know, it's like constantly comparing. Or if someone says, you know, this is the way to bring peace to your home. This is the way to restore your joy. This, you know, anything. And they could be very, very well intentioned. That's the thing. Cause you're just their own story, their own truth, quote unquote, whatever it is. But we're soaking up every single message and it leaves you feeling like friggin' like I don't even know. You know what I mean? Like
It leaves you wrecked. And you mentioned like the woman running or like the woman giving. That I think when we're sponges in that stage, and we don't know where to go or what to grab onto, it's really a lack of even just like, what am I trying to say? People are not okay being mediocre. So we've gotten into a culture of you've got to be the best, like live your best life. Guess what? Do you know how freeing it is to just be accepting of the hard parts of life and being okay being mediocre sometimes? Mm-hmm. That integration of, you know what, I'm not killing it today, but I'm also a good mom.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely want to, you know, divorce my husband, but I'm still a good wife. Like, because it's weird. Those two things can exist in the same sentence. Like, you can have feelings of wanting to not be a mom and still be a good mom. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. So it's this weird facade that we put on for each other, right? As moms, where we just want to look really good. And we want people to know we're really good. Well, what if we just were kind of not really good all the time?
Yeah.
And told people that. To me, here's what I know. I know that God made humans and mothers and fathers and daughters and sons. I know that part of the reason why we're on this planet is because of interpersonal relationships.
Yeah.
So we need each other to co-regulate our feelings and our emotions. We need each other to reflect and mirror mm-hmm. our feelings. So when I'm like crying and sad, you see that I'm crying and sad. Your little mirror neurons go off in your brain. You feel empathetic. You feel sad for me or whatever. But we need each other. And it's called attunement. So I think what social media does is it almost takes the attunement part out of it. Mm-hmm. And no one's reflecting how we're really feeling. We're reflecting on how we should feel. And so when no one's reflecting how we as humans are really feeling, like moms in our condition, right. it can make you start to feel inadequate. Things aren't right. Well, I'm doing it wrong. I need to do it better. I need to do this. I need to go be at the gym. I need to be doing everything everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not your it's like we're not attuning to each other. We're just trying to put on a show. Mm-hmm. We gotta start reflecting. I think like your podcast is great because you're being vulnerable. The people, here's another thing. Moms, we can talk about vulnerability a lot, like, but not be vulnerable.
Right.
I just want to be vulnerable with you. I just like, but really you're never saying anything.
Right.
You gotta really say stuff. Like, hey, guess what happened today? Mm-hmm. I felt like a total shit show. I screamed, like, I'll tell you right now, last year with Ethan and my husband, I had a total mental breakdown and I came home. He was sitting on the steps. He told me that it was easier when I wasn't home, and I lost my mind and I threatened to kill myself and I tried to hit him. This is really vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
People are probably like, oh my gosh, she's going to be a therapist. That's terrifying.
That's why.
Guess what?
The best therapist, actually.
Well, thank you. Well, I'm in Montana, so I probably will never see it. Just kidding. Yeah, I will probably never see any. Well, hopefully Montana people start listening to this podcast. But like, I had a total mental breakdown. I lost my mind. That felt really vulnerable. I kind of got sweaty, like telling you that.
Yeah.
That feels vulnerable to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not trying to like, when people are having a hard time, not trying to be like, well, just pray more. And this is hard now, but it gets easier. Shut up.
I know.
Like,
I
shut
know.
Your freaking mouth. Like, when is that ever helpful? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you actually sleeping right now? No, I'm just kidding.
Awake. Oh my
God. I'm kidding.
To have your moment of vulnerability. And then I was going to,
are you going to have to cut that out? You're like, mm-hmm.
I could be probably half asleep though. No, I would never. No, stop. You know me.
You can sleep on me.
Your voice is super soothing.
No one can see our interaction. That's the hard thing. I can see your face and you're like closing your eyes, taking it in.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing, you know?
So take a little rest. I'm just kidding.
Stop making me laugh. Okay. No,
you can. We gotta laugh.
It's, you do, because otherwise it would be like bawling, crying every second.
Yeah.
But maybe. No, that's super real. Thank you for sharing that. And I've been there, definitely have been there mm-hmm. where, you know, anything Aaron says triggers me at the wrong moment and I go fucking mm-hmm. crazy. Like, I'm just like,
yeah,
like insane. You know what I mean? I'm like, who is this person? Like, I would never want anyone to see this side of me. You know what I mean? And I'm like, why are you still married to me? You know, why are you still married to me? Why are you still here? Like,
that's called the shame puddle. We call that the shame puddle. Cause after you get it out, you realize you went there again, Tanya, you did it again. You said you were never going to do that again. You did it again.
Yeah.
You know, and those feelings, shame really does a number on people and it keeps people from healing. What we have to work on and what we have to encourage each other. And it's like, yeah, Tanya, you did it again, but you know what? You are still better than you were yesterday and you are still a good mom and you're still a good wife. Yeah. Kaylee, you threatened to kill yourself and you tried to hit Ethan, which looked hilarious. And you looked like Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Guess what? You did that, and that's really awful. Yeah. No, it's funny. I did. I like looked like the game, just trying to, and he was actually laughing because it was funny. But guess what? I felt the shame, And it was really awful. And also, I'm still a good mom and I'm still a good wife. And Ethan's damn lucky to be married to me, because otherwise I'd rock him, sock him more often. I don't know.
No, you're so right. Like, you're right. Shame is a huge, huge point. But that's a whole nother, we can do a whole nother podcast on the shame. In and of itself, because
shame,
it's a silent killer. And
it is a silent killer.
Right.
That's why sometimes moms just need a body, a human body next to them, mm-hmm. that doesn't say anything, that doesn't give them good advice, that doesn't give them a book, doesn't give them just doesn't give them anything except just the presence of, I'm here next to you and you're safe because I'm here.
Right.
Like, sometimes that's all we need. Kids can't give that to parents. Mm-hmm. That's not right. Our kids can't give that to us. Spouses can give it to us. Friends can give it to us.
I think that's important to note for the person. If you're listening, you're like, I have a friend that sounds like she's going through something similar, like a really hard place. Like, what can I do?
Sure.
I feel like, I don't know what to do. What do I say? What do I call her? You know what I mean? Like, what's the best thing to say when someone's in that space? I think
sure.
You can talk to it, but just go a little deeper. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the don'ts. So, don't tell them to pray. Mm. Don't give them Bible verses. because all those things are great. It does not help in the moment. Yeah. It really doesn't. Unless they're specifically asking for it.
Right.
Do not say, did you try this? Have you tried this? Have you tried that?
Right.
Who cares? What if they've tried it all? They don't need any suggestions. No one needs any more suggestions. We have Google.
I'm sure you can speak to this. Don't interject with how you relate to that story about, you know, how you forget about you all of a sudden, it like deflects and it becomes your.
Yeah. Yes. That's very misattuned. Don't make it about you.
Yeah.
Don't even talk about yourself, actually. You know, you can say, I can really relate to that, but you don't need to go into detail. Right. Here's what you can do. Oh my gosh, Tanya, I had no idea. Mm-hmm. Can I give you a hug right now? What do you need from me? And actually don't even say what do you need from me? Cause I guess that's, you're asking them to think. Really, when someone's really wound up, they just need your presence. Mm-hmm. They need to know you're safe. Tanya, you're here. You're in this room. You're safe. I'm here. I'm with you. Can you take a deep breath with me? Can you be breathing through your nose and out through your mouth? Tanya, can you put your hand on your stomach and one hand on your heart and take a really deep breath for me? Those are really important things to say. Yeah.
That's good.
The grounding. People need, like, when you're in that fight or flight, you really need to be grounded. And for someone maybe who isn't in a fight or flight mode, who's just depressed and talking about their story.
Yeah.
Really good listening and not even a lot of questions. Just a lot of listening. Eye contact, nodding, yes, wow, I didn't know, that sounds so hard. And then thank you, a lot of thank yous for being vulnerable and being brave. Thank you for sharing that with me. I feel really honored that you opened up. Mm-hmm. And then just, people need consistency, so don't promise them, you know, you don't need to be a savior for someone. They're mm-hmm. adults, we're adults, but just your presence, your body.
What changes? From when you're not on your antidepressant to when you are. And then two, is there ever a time where you're like off, like, okay, I'm okay for a season, or you like continue on them?
Well, so I'll start with the second question. I thought I was a person who could be off. And mm-hmm. then after my other babies is when I realized that I'm maybe a lifer, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know how, obviously there's a lot of research about the safety of taking antidepressants over time. Listen, the therapeutic work is always most important, going to therapy. And I personally recommend emotionally focused therapy, interpersonal therapy, EMDR, things that are really, and you can look them up, your listeners, you guys can look it up, but things that not necessarily cognitive behavioral, but more dynamic, psychodynamic, which is just a little more talk therapy. Mm-hmm. And really that kind of therapy, it just does a better job of getting that mind-body connection. But yes, I'm a person who needs to take antidepressants for as long as I possibly can. And I know that because I've been off of them and it's been real bad. And I can tell. So then the second part is, for me, an antidepressant doesn't actually alter the way I feel. I still feel sad. I still feel angry. I still feel overwhelmed. I still cry. I feel happy. What it does is it just makes things more tolerable. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about life, right? Like, character building is all about being able to tolerate the pains in the world. It doesn't mean that there's no pain or that there's no suffering. And so the antidepressant kind of just allows me to, like, I can tolerate a little more chaos. I can tolerate a little more touching. I can, I'm a little more flexible.
Yeah.
I'm just a little more flexible. I'm a little more like, less riled up. I'm a little less rock and sock'em. I'm a little, so like it just, and it also gives me that hot second to just take a beat and not react in a totally, chaotic way.
Yeah. Okay.
It gives me, it just gives me a little hot second because when I'm not on that antidepressant, I go from 0 to 100 in no seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called a trigger. That happens to a lot of people. But that antidepressant just gives me just a little, like, I just can take a beat.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to kill my husband and everything's going to be okay. Right. Walk away. But doesn't change you. I mean, I am who I am still. I still feel all the feelings.
Yeah.
All the time. I still get, you know,
I think people think that they're, it's going to, like, alter them in some way or, you know what I mean?
Like, oh, absolutely not. Yeah. Like the devil. Like the devil's going to get inside you. You're going to take the pill and get the devil. Just kidding.
But listen, I do want to know what you thought about, I guess you would call it naturopathic, holistic methods of treatment for anxiety and depression, such as CBD, all those things. What are your thoughts?
I personally, I'll just be vulnerable. I take CBD and I've also taken like a CBD with the tinsiest bit of THC in it for when I'm during that time of the month.
Yeah. Yeah.
For pain. This is street doctoring and street therapy.
Yeah. But we're not here to give you actual medical advice. You're just sharing your, what has been working for you. And I was just curious to know, as you were ringing in on, you know, your thoughts on pharmaceutical drugs, what you thought about like holistic approaches as well.
Yeah. I think it's great. I've actually taken Chinese herbs as well.
Yeah.
From a naturopath in best year college when we were in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I found it to be very effective. Sometimes, even if it's a placebo, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, if it's allowing you to get out of bed and live your life and engage with people who love you.
Right.
It's not harmful. And it's, you know, do it.
Right.
Do it.
Love that. Okay, so we are going to wrap it up a little bit, and I want to know last thoughts from you, Kaylee. What are some takeaways? What do people need to know? What do mothers need to know leaving this conversation as it relates to their mental health, you know? What would you say?
Wow, what would I say? So many things I would say. I would say, first of all, if you're asking yourself, is this normal? Walk yourself into a place where you can get help. If you're even wondering, should I feel this way? Should I not feel this way? Is this normal? Is this not normal? You don't have to be in the worst place to get help.
Mm.
You don't have to be desperate to get help. You don't have to get to the point of total collapse to get help. You can get it even if you feel like you don't need help and you're doing okay. You can reach out, your doctor, ask around for a good therapist, ask around for good postpartum treatment. Please, please don't wait to have a mental breakdown, to question your sanity to get some help, man.
That's good.
Get out there, do it. Yeah. And I do want to leave everyone saying, if you are feeling suicidal, if you are feeling disconnected, if you are feeling isolated, please We have some hotlines that I think Tanya's going to post.
Yeah, I'll link all the official hotlines down below, but you go ahead and share. Go ahead and share while you have,
this postpartum support international hotline, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, and then the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services. And if you're listening to this and you're resonating with any of it, please, please, please call. I would say even call just the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-TALK, which is 1-800-273-8255. Don't be afraid to admit that you are thinking about dark things. We all experience that in our lives. No one is spared the grief of humanity and the grief of living.
Yeah, for sure.
Please, please get help. You're not alone. You're really, really not alone. And if people out there seem like they're perfect, I promise you that even in their pursuit of perfection, there is depravity and insecurity and pain that is driving and motivating them to seek a way of life and an ideal life that's not even possible. Mm. So you're not alone, ladies and gentlemen, you know.
Yeah.
Men are listening. Men, hear me out. Help your women. Don't wait for them to have a mental breakdown.
Ooh, yes.
Like if you think they need help, it's okay to say, hey, you look like you need help. And not from a you're weak place, but from a I love you and I want to help you place.
Right.
So
I love that. I love that. You know, we have to be okay with being a little intrusive in those times when we see that something's off, because it's a little awkward. You kind of, the first time you have to call a hotline on someone's behalf, right? It feels like, am I invading their privacy? But we're talking about people's lives here, you know? Right. And so I think that's the importance that we have to remember whether it's you or someone you know, and you're fighting for them on their behalf, the best thing that you can do for them is to literally stand up and fight for them, you know, because they may not have the strength, audacity, or whatever else to do it on their own. So,
right. And like you said, the worst thing that happens is like they feel a little awkward, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's the worst thing that you just kind of like, it's a little awkward.
Right.
The best thing that can happen is that they get the help they need.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And people, like the fact that they know you're taking their mental health seriously, like this person doesn't mess around. This person's for me. This person will come up beside me and call who they need to call and get me the help I need to get. That's a powerful statement.
Absolutely.
So,
oh my goodness, this was so good. It was so good. I truly, truly believe, Kaylee, that this is going to help a lot of people listening. And so thank you for being vulnerable. Thank you for just coming on here and just offering up what you have as you kind of finish up your journey of school and education as it relates to mental health. And you're coming back, obviously. So right. I can't wait for our next topic.
Kaylee's Corner. Kaylee's Corner.
If you're loving Kaylee right now, then definitely let her know. Show her some love. Oh, where can people find you if they do want to find you?
Ooh.
You want to see your beautiful face.
Where can you find me? Come up to Montana. I'll take you for a horse ride. Well, I'm on Instagram. I, you know, you can Google me. I have no.
Oh my gosh. What's your Instagram handle?
I think it's Kaylee Canning with a K. Kaylee Canning. Kanning. Give me some likes, people. I want to be an influencer. Just kidding. No, I don't.
Okay. Goodbye. We're done here. I love you. We'll talk soon. Bye. All right, you guys, it's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me again for another episode of the Inkfully podcast. Man, if that wasn't the most vulnerable thing that we have ever done on the planet Earth, then I don't know what was. But I hope that it served you. I hope that you have some insight and some takeaways to either bring back to your significant other or to share with a friend. And on that note, if you have a friend that you feel like would benefit from this show, do one thing for me. Share this episode with them. And then come hit me up on Instagram. I love hearing from you. I love knowing how this show is resonating with you, what your takeaways are. Take a screenshot of you listening to the show and upload it to your stories so that I know that you listened and that I can respond and we can engage with one another. I cannot wait. So I will see you on Instagram @inkfully. And until next week, be well, live well, and ink fully.